When Penny Wong became foreign minister in 2022, it signalled a shift in Australia's level of engagement with the Pacific. In the first 12 months, she visited every Pacific Island nation, several of them many times. That frantic schedule was prompted by the announcement made during the last federal election that the Solomon Islands had signed a security pact with China, news that raised major alarm bells across the Asia Pacific and in Washington. Although Australia sees itself as a major security power in our Pacific neighbourhood, when it comes to our own security guarantees, we look to distant horizons, horizons of the US and the UK, a truth writ large in the $350 billion AUKUS agreement. But in the changing global strategic landscape, does our ongoing reliance on those distant allies make us safer? And does it come at a cost to closer relations in the Asia Pacific? These are some of the questions explored in a new book called Girt by Sea. The authors, Beck Strating, politics professor at La Trobe University, and Joanne Wallace, professor of international security at the University of Adelaide, challenge us to reimagine the long-held assumptions built into our foreign and strategic policy. Beck and Joanne, welcome to Saturday Extra.
Thanks so much for having us.
Beck, I have to start with this. I believe the germ for the of the idea for this book was Crocodile Dundee. What on earth has Mick Dundee got to do with Australia's security policy?
Yes, it does. And actually, Joanne and I argue that Crocodile Dundee shouldn't have anything to do with our foreign and defence policy. But the origin story for this book is in 2020, very early in 2020, Joanne and I were at a workshop held by the Department of Defence in Canberra. And on the first panel, which was looking at a concept of strategic personality, which is really kind of how should Australia present itself on the global stage, one of the kind of leaders in the Australian national security community suggested that we should be like Crocodile Dundee, that we should role model, Australia should role model ourselves on Crocodile Dundee and go out into the world carrying a big knife. And for Joanne and I and a number of other people in the room, that concept didn't really sit very comfortably with us. And luckily, Joanne was on the next panel and she was extremely quick thinking in coming up with an alternative person that perhaps Australia could use as a role model for our role in international affairs.
And who is that? Joanne?
Well, thinking on our feet, we came up with Ash Barty, tennis player Ash Barty, as the best model what we think Australia's strategic personality should look like in the future.
And tell me a bit more about that. I mean, your whole book is about reimagining Australia's security, which includes reimagining, I imagine, our strategic personality. What is it that Ash Barty presents that Australia should be personifying?
Well, the first aspect is just who Barty is. You know, she's a proud First Nations woman who promotes and who gives back to her community. And we think this opens up wider conversations about Australia's identity, our society, our demography and our geographic location. The second part is how Barty behaves. She's hugely successful and well-respected, but she's also known to be very humble. There's a lot of lessons that can be learnt from Australia. We're a middle power that can do a lot, but there are limits that mean that we need to work with others. And this speaks to Barty's known history as an excellent team player. And we think this reminds Australia of the need to build broad-based multilateral responses to security challenges.
Would you?
And we also admire her versatility too. You know, remember when she changed to cricket when tennis wasn't going as well for her? Again, we think that Australia needs to be versatile and maybe rethink some of the decisions that we've made recently.
But isn't this exactly the shift that Penny Wong is obviously trying to make in the major speeches? I mean, she spoke, I think, at one of the launches of your book. She agreed essentially with you we're too siloed in our strategic and foreign thinking. But she says the shift's already happening. She talks about humility. She talks about working with our near neighbours. She often brings up our First Nations history and our multicultural society in representing Australia's strategic interests and reflections, I suppose. Do you feel like a shift is being made?
Yes, look, we do. And I think that's probably why the minister was willing to launch our book, although when she did launch our book, she did identify some things that she had disagreed with. But we began writing this book under the last government. As we said, it was in 2020 that the idea germinated. But we do recognise that the government has moved a long way in this direction. But, you know, let's think about the unsuccessful Voice to Parliament referendum. there is still a lot to do in Australia about building an inclusive society and making sure that Australia includes all voices in debates about our security and how we should pursue that in the future.
So tell me how an inclusive society impacts our security, because in the book you say the Australian security community needs to broaden what is meant by security, not just who's involved in it, but what is meant by it, what we need to secure, and most importantly, what we're securing from. What are the security threats we need to be thinking about outside the China paradigm? What is meant by security in your reimagining?
I think that the point that you make in your question is really important there, that we have in this country tended to, over the last decade or so in particular, been really focused on seeing security through the lens of China and the kinds of security challenges that is presented through the rise of China and a more aggressive foreign policy presented by, particularly by the regime of President Xi Jinping. And, you know, these are important challenges, as we outline in the book, but they're not the only ones. You know, environmental challenges are going to affect communities in Australia. We're already seeing this. We use a case in one of the chapters of communities in the Torres Strait that are already being affected by global sea level rise as a consequence of climate change. Now, for people living in those communities, these are serious security challenges for them. Mm. These are the sorts of challenges that make their homes uninhabitable, that affect their culture, that affect their livelihoods. And so there's a range of sort of security challenges that we can talk about. They're environmental, they're challenges to our institutions. We can see the threats to democracy across the globe. We are not immune to those challenges either. There are threats to human security. But the other thing that we contribute in this book is the sense that these challenges are complex, they're interrelated, they're integrated, and so we can't have siloed approaches to them because these threats are bundled in together in very complex ways. And the maritime offers a really useful way of thinking about that, because even if we think about the pandemic and the effects of the pandemic on shipping and the effects of the pandemic on increasing illegal fishing. And illegal fishing is also linked to strategic challenges in the region, grey zone tactics, for example. All of these things are kind of meshing together in really sophisticated ways and requires sophisticated responses.
And what are you saying about the level of sophistication of our responses, that that we're over-investing in sort of military defence mechanisms and under-focusing on a whole lot of other threats? You know, how would taking action against the fishing boats, the illegal fishing boats, for instance, you know, keep shore up Australia's defence of our nation? Can you explain that?
Yeah, sure. So it's actually under the current government, the concept of national defence, which was outlined in the Defence Strategic Review, actually says that what we need is whole of government responses. And the National Defence Strategy that was released only a couple of weeks ago has confirmed this idea of national defence as underpinning our defence planning, that it needs this kind of national response. It can't be siloed. It has to be integrated. And this includes dealing with challenges. I mean, Australia's Navy spends a lot of its time focused on illegal fishing and not so much on, you know, countering the threat of China.
Well,
it's
that's
an important
true.
Economic issue. But the problem is, and you know, with full respect to the foreign minister and to what the Australian government is doing, when you read those documents, these are documents that are focused on defence and the military. You get past chapter 3 and then you realise that they've sort of abandoned the concept of whole of government because that's not the remit of these planning documents. And so what was required, and Joanne will probably be able to go into this further, is a sense of a national security strategy that's able to knit these parts together, the different tools of statecraft.
And Joanne, we don't have that in any way. I mean, I know that, just to quote Penny Wong again, and sorry to keep bringing the foreign minister in, but she's recently talked in a major speech about, you know, the interrelation of diplomacy and defence. That's been a big criticism of Australia's defence policy, that has been defence-led, not diplomacy-led so much. But is that changed, and is that what we're talking about?
Well, we do actually have one example, and that's the Office of the Pacific that focuses on Australia's Pacific policy. It sits in DFAT. There's about 330 DFAT staff in the Office of Pacific, but it has secondees from across the government. And it started in 2019, and it's doing a great job now of making sure that our policy is coordinated and that the regional agencies, sorry, the government agencies are working together to make sure that our activities complement rather than duplicate or undermine each other. So we do argue that the Office of the Pacific could form a meaningful model of whole of government statecraft.
Okay, just last question, and I think it's a key one. You suggest that some in the security community are in denial about the challenge China presents to the US's dominance in our region, and that America remains central to how we think about our security to the point that we basically don't have a plan B. What should a plan B look like?
Well, we don't go quite that far. The 2023 Defence Strategic Review was very clear in recognising that the US's dominance in our region is over. So I think that's broadly accepted, at least rhetorically. But what Beck and I are concerned about is that many of our colleagues in the national security debate haven't necessarily internalised that fact, and that the time may come soon that we can't rely solely on the US for our security. Now, in our book, we deliberately don't say what we think Plan B should look like, because we think this needs to be a product of public debate about the pros and cons of different approaches. Instead, in our book, we're just attempting to challenge the assumptions and the sentimental attachments that influence the national security debate. And we want to inspire others to imagine other possible futures beyond the, let's be honest, quite depressing one that we currently face.
It is a little depressing, that's for sure. Beck Strading and Joanne Wallace, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for this reimagining. Their book is titled Girt by Sea. It's published by Black Ink. That's Professor Beck Strating, Professor of Politics and International Relations at La Trobe University, and Joanne Wallace, Professor of International Security at the University of Adelaide.
Getting in touch with ABCRN is easy. Join the conversation live using the ABC Listen app's call and text features.